Hello, and welcome to the Development Debrief with Catherine Van Sickle, the stories-based podcast that interviews donors, thought leaders, and professionals in the field of fundraising. Welcome to Season 9. I am thrilled to open with a conversation focused on prospect research featuring Steve Grimes. Coincidentally, we were both asked to speak at the Association of Prospect Researchers for Advancement, Pennsylvania, fall conference this morning, so the timing is perfect. In our conversation, we talk about the important role both researchers and fundraisers play as they work together towards a common goal. Steve reflects on experiences throughout his career and shares how they have shaped his approach today. Steve is the Associate Director of Data Insight at the Helen Brown Group. Most recently, he was the Assistant Director of the NYC Mayor's Office of Data Analytics. There, he provided guidance and supervision to the office's data scientists and analytic portfolio. Previously, he was the Director of Development Analytics and Strategy at Jazz at Lincoln Center, producing reporting and analysis needs for senior leadership. Before Jazz, he joined the ACLU as the Prospect Research Analyst, working with the Principal Gifts team in the national office at the beginning of the Trump administration. In a previous life, he pursued academia as a doctoral fellow at Rutgers University, focusing his research on labor relations and visual sociology. When the time allowed, he taught various courses on social inequality, social research, and the sociology of emotions. Steve received a bachelor's degree in psychology from SUNY at Old Westbury, a master's degree in sociology from St. John's University, and a second master's degree in media studies from CUNY at Brooklyn College. He currently sits on the board of the New York State Coalition Against Domestic Violence. He is the director for NEDRA, served as a director of APRA GNY, and on various APRA committees, and was co-host of a now defunct podcast on prospect research. So here we are. Steve is a fan of video games, nature, and history. Now let's get started.
All right.
Hi, Steve. Welcome to the debrief.
Hey, Catherine. How are you?
Good. I am very happy to be launching a new season in this beautiful fall that we're having.
Yeah, congrats on that. Congrats.
Have you been enjoying the foliage and the changes in season?
I have a bunch of trees that are right outside from where I work, and they are starting to change slowly from the top, and they're all turning either red or yellow. It's gorgeous. Every day I wake up and I just see a little bit more, and it's just like, it just places you and centers you. It's a beautiful thing. So yes, hard yes to that. I am.
And I guess that's one of the perks of working from home then.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, I got vibes here. I got my music going, you know, we're having a conversation. I have no one bothering me. I can get focused. And then I get to look at pretty trees. Absolutely.
So we're going to dive into a topic that the debrief has touched on here and there, but has not closely analyzed, and that is prospect research.
Okay.
This is your expertise. This is your subject area. I got really excited when I saw your professional experience, and I'm going to open us up with a really broad question.
Sure.
What makes a good prospect researcher?
I think at a high level, at a base level, a good prospect researcher is interested in human beings. Besides the skill sets, besides the technical skill sets, but besides the critical thinking skill sets, putting all those things aside, because you can teach that, you inherently you have to be able to be interested in human beings. Think about the early prospect researchers, like they're like ancestors or something, but think of the early prospect researchers, right? You know, when they first started, most of these individuals were librarians, and librarians, they'll tell you, and many of them don't actually, because this is what I've heard from librarians. It isn't that they're interested in books. They're interested in human beings, right? Because bodies have to write those books, right? Mm-hmm. So many of the early prospect researchers were, you know, individuals who came from libraries. And the work that we inherently do is one which you have to be interested in telling a story about a human being so that you're able to communicate things to your gift officer, to your leadership, to your colleagues, whatever that may be, right? So I think at a base level, You just have to be interested in what it means to understand human beings. And like, we are an introverted bunch, extremely introverted bunch. So it makes sense that we all just like sitting down in front of our computers with some distance to get to learn about human beings, right?
Well, the first thing I thought when you said that was, well, fundraisers are interested in human beings. That I think that's what makes a good fundraiser too. But then you made that distinction that perhaps, and this is a generalization, but perhaps prospect researchers are introverted and fundraisers are extroverted.
Yeah. That has been sort of our contention for millennia past. And it's interesting to see the energy and the electricity that is generated when a prospect researcher and a GIF officer connect and they're on the same wavelength. I've gone to conferences and, you know, you have like sometimes the frontline GIF officer and the prospect researcher, they're presenting like their workflow and whatnot, and they're on stage and they're talking about what they're talking about. Every time you're just like in awe of just that energy that was created because they were able to connect with each other. You know, ultimately, frontline fundraisers are interested in what we are interested in, but just in a different way. They have a different filter, a different perspective, a different just way of looking at things.
So you touched on this. I do agree with you that there is a tension, and it's almost inherent, between frontline fundraisers and researchers. And I agree with you that we're all talking about the same thing, but sometimes it feels like different languages. How have you experienced that at different institutions and over the years?
I want to say pretty much every institution I've been at, I have had really good experiences with every frontline fundraiser I've worked with. I don't think I've come across one frontline fundraiser that, like, to this day, that I can't just shoot them a quick text and just say, hey. The perspective I've taken, which is sometimes difficult for other prospect research professionals to take, and that is not a fault of them, it's just about their aspirations and maybe kind of framing it kind of differently, is that I am a through point through which we can then get a donation to from a constituent. And my through point is one which synthesizes information so that that GIF officer can go ahead and feel comfortable, calm their anxiety, get themselves centered to be in front of that person to have a conversation and have the confidence to know, hey, we have an idea of what you can give. This is what we're asking, right? Mm-hmm. That has helped me do the work of what it means to communicate with the gift officer in a way that I don't come off as threatening. The work doesn't come off as arduous, right? And they understand, hey, I am here to kind of be slotted in terms of how you work, just how like you're being slotted in terms of how the entire organization works. We are colleagues, we are peers, right? So really at the end of the day, I'm just here to help you because when I'm able to help you, in return, you're helping me, which is in turn helping the organization, which is in turn helping the beneficiaries that we serve.
I think that perspective is great. And I will say over my years, I've had some really wonderful relationships with colleagues, finding exciting leads and then actually meeting them and telling them how it went and having mm-hmm. that dialogue, I find is so rewarding. Mm-hmm. So I think that perspective is great. I think returning to the prospect researcher and telling them how these meetings are going and what we find in live time is great. What are other ways that we can better bridge the gap, whether it's someone on your team or working with a consultant? What do you think are other ways that fundraisers who are listening can think about it, and perhaps vice versa if we have researchers who are listening?
That is a really interesting question because I see the attempts that many GIF officers make to be there with the prospect researcher, and you know, your point about coming back and like closing the loop for information and sharing the story is a great one. It actually, you know, brings a lot of good energy back to the process. But like key in that process of you coming back, Catherine, is you what you're also communicating to the prospect researcher. When you come back to me and you say, hey, I met so-and-so and so-and-so, he was great. He does have 2 children. He, you know, has 4 boats, right? You know, he did donate to this person, but like, he really just loves this person, right? what you're doing there is not necessarily giving me a story, which I tend to already know for whatever, you know, because of all the research, but what you're doing is you're validating the system through which we are creating the process, and you're validating me, right? So that's why that loop is so necessary, because it's like, I gave you a thing, that thing got you to a certain point, you took the ball over the line, right? And now we get to go ahead and have the celebratory dance in the end zone.
And what are other things that we can do, or things that you've seen that have gone well that you think there should be more of?
Proper portfolio meetings. Oh. Right. And like, and proper is a heavy term here, a loaded term, right? It can mean many different things. Going back to sort of understanding your part within the organization and like how you're supposed to facilitate the process moving through you, understanding that the gift officer may have a very particular way of working, a very particular way of communicating, recognizing that, and you've been doing this work for a long time, nonprofits are a mess. They're inherently dysfunctional, right? That like, and we have to work within these systems, and not everything is going to be clean, you know, because your eye is on that celebratory dance in the end zone, right? Mm-hmm. But like, there is a lot of work that needs to happen. Right. If you've watched any of those reality shows with football teams, or I don't know if they do with basketball teams now, right? And you see all the work that players have to do over a year just to get to the point where they can go ahead and score a point. The point may not even matter, right? They may be getting blown out. Right. But like, hey, like all of this work had to happen just for us to do this, you know, just to do this thing. I think the portfolio meetings kind of need to have that sort of, not tone, but sort of just way of understanding, like, this is practice. This is us like really just unpacking something and figuring out how we are really going to lock in with each other. So mm-hmm. when game day comes, I'm throwing you, you know, that ball and you're hitting the end zone. A meeting that is consistent, a meeting that when both of you or many of you leave, however you want to set it up, and when you're leaving, you feel invigorated to now do the next thing.
That room for the meeting.
It is your prospect researcher. It is the gift officer. Depending on the dynamics within the organization, it would be nice to have the person that the gift officer is reporting to.
Okay.
Not as a sort of a accountability thing, but sort of a, we are here to talk strategy. I don't want now when we're having conversation, you and me and Catherine in this room, and I now don't know if our boss agrees with it. That is the only other person that I would suggest needs to be in that room, depending on the dynamic. Really, at the end of the day, it's the prospect researcher and the frontline gift officer. Because again, you're colleagues, right? You're just two human beings trying to get a task done. You're going to have to learn how to make some level of connection with that person, right? So that you can have just an honest conversation about, why is this person belong in your portfolio or not? Why mm-hmm. haven't you, you know, called this individual? Like, talk to me. What's happening, right? Because I now need to take this information, synthesize it in myself, and put it into my process.
It's on that agenda. Is the agenda prospect driven? Is it portfolio driven?
Again, that's going to depend on the organization. Mm-hmm. You'll have organizations that will have those goals. I do not like to have those prospect meetings based on goals. It stresses everybody out. And you'll see, I don't know in your experience, in terms of just your experience and who you've been talking to, many organizations are moving away from that goal sort of structure. There's numbers to hit. There are things that we have to do, right? But we're not going to penalize you if you don't hit your goals, kind of thing, right? And penalizing could be, oh, you're not going to get your bonus, because it's not generative for conversations, right? Folks are scrambling. There isn't opportunities for creativity in terms of like approaches of how to handle a particular situation. So I do not like a goal-based sort of way of sitting down and having a portfolio meeting.
Subject matter.
Yes. It's more project-based. It's more, the idea here is to take the emotions out of the conversation while still having emotions in the conversation, recognizing mm-hmm. human, right? But really take emotions out of, I mean, not the conversation, but the process itself. It's just a process, We
Or
do
the
pay.
results, right? I
Right.
mean, having that expectation around the results isn't helpful.
Right. And instead, what we're doing is like, look, this is the process and the system that we have set up. Let's talk about that process and see how that system's set up and whether you're actually able to jive with it. And if not, then we just need to talk about changing the process and the system and see whether that's possible. When I talk about that work and a good proper prospect, a portfolio, a meeting, it's work. People are gonna struggle with that. And it's okay to struggle with that because we won't want to do the celebratory dance.
Should these be monthly? Should they be quarterly?
Monthly is good, but life, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, look, I'm gonna put my manager's glasses on here. And if I had a person reporting to me and saying, look, these monthly meetings are too difficult for me to coordinate with my gift officer, my manager glasses or manager hat would say, no, you're gonna need to make that happen. You need to connect with your gift officer at least once a month.
So I've worked at organizations where we've had a research team in-house that their colleagues, you meet with them in the way that you're talking about. Obviously, this was pre-pandemic, so we would meet in person in conference rooms and things like that.
Yeah.
And now I'm at an organization where, funny enough, we're working with Helen Brown Group, which is where you are now.
Yeah.
And that is a virtual relationship with someone who serves as a consultant. And while they are a colleague, it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
What do you think is the biggest difference, and how do people know which their institution needs? I mean, is it always based on size? What, how can people think through that?
10 times out of 10, it is always better to hire the person in-house. There is no
That's
substitute.
a hot take.
Yes, there is absolutely no substitute for having a person who comes into your organization in a day-to-day basis, opening those emails that everybody else is opening, dealing with the same broken coffee maker that everybody else is dealing with. Right, that is, in the same desk, in the same chair, in the same infrastructure, soaking up that institution. There is no substitute for it. Of course, I try to do my best job possible. Consultants are great, and this is where I'm finding sort of like my value with my clients. Consultants are great when you do have people, but you're like, I think I'm not seeing something, and I think we can be doing something, I'm just not sure. And you now want a outside person to come in, fresh eyes, not in that system, not in that energy, right? To go, yes, you could be doing that. This is how it can be done. Or no, you really probably shouldn't. You should be doing something else. And that can be at a high level, and just in terms of like just a project, or it can be at that like a ground level where you're already doing a thing. You're not exactly sure how to do it, but now you need that expertise for someone to come in and actually get you over the line. And like maybe I'm biased, because I've always worked in a brick and mortar organization, and now I work as a consultant, and I have some real difficulty sometimes just making sure that I'm providing clients what they need and that's impactful. Like me and my team, we talk about this all the time. We struggle with this because it's important for us to not provide a templatized approach to to people's problems, right?
Yes.
But particularly considering, Catherine, that our organizations are dysfunctional the way they are. I mean, our entire revenue structure is based on people being nice to us, right? That is dysfunctional. And it's nothing, and like, I don't mean to say that in a negative term. It doesn't have to be termed as a negative thing. It is dysfunctional in the sense of that it's not efficient, right? It's not a thing that anyone else would do outside of the nonprofit world, right?
Yeah.
So there are going to be systematic and operational things that just come up because of that. So how is like, we are at the Helen Brown Group, at least within our division, whenever we are having conversations with clients, right, we are trying our best to make sure that we are understanding the aspirations that they are trying to hit. And what are the obstacles to those aspirations? Talk to me about your CRM, right? Do you have all your fields in there? Yeah, cool. Okay, all right, great. What about your leadership? Have they switched out?
in the past year, 2 years? Okay, rebranding, anything like that? Like those finer nuancey things where you kind of, when you're looking at the numbers, when you're looking at the ones and zeros, like I'm not going to see those things. But like to know that there was a rebranding, to know that leadership just changed hands, you know, last year, to know that your CRM is a little wonky, the conversion didn't really take. The last people, they clock things this way, and these people, they clock things that way. Like those little finer things, right? Is a consultant isn't going to know from the, oh, you want to do a campaign and this is your goal, and like these are things you want to hit, because like folks don't necessarily like to talk about those things. For some reason or another, they're embarrassed. Like it was their fault. You know, like, you know, just tell me, like, because I'm going to need to understand these things if I'm able to give you insights that are impactful.
The context, the history, the players, all of those things are
absolutely
really important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And think of anyone that you meet for the first time, even as a frontline person, right? And you're out there and you're having a conversation with them. That first time that they speak to you is going to be a very different tone than maybe the fifth or sixth or seventh time that they speak to you, right? Right. Then they're telling you things that they weren't telling you that first time they were telling you. Not unless you're just magnificent, and Catherine, I'm sure you are, right? But like, you know, for the most part, you need to kind of get to know people before they're able to tell you things that like are actually happening around them.
It's building trust.
Yeah.
And when you said that, I was thinking too, someone once told me that a good gift officer can close a major gift, but an excellent major gift officer can close two major gifts with the same constituent. And that's when you really know that you have built an excellent relationship. What do you think about that one?
An excellent gift officer can close two concurrent?
Concurrent, or they finish one and then you go back and ask them for another one.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the successful ones that I've come across in my career, they were consistent. I worked with an individual, his name is Paul Dana. He's not at the ACLU anymore. But when he was at the ACLU, I would go into Paul's office ever so often. And, you know, just chit-chat with Paul. And I would just talk about whatever. And Paul made me feel like the most special person in the world. Right. Like it was a pleasure every time to talk to Paul. I could be complaining about anything. And I would leave that office after talking to Paul, like, man, I feel 10 times better. I just feel like I've been acknowledged. Right. And like he just had this energy about him. Even sure he still does. He's doing probably well for himself. Right. And like, I think an excellent gift officer just has the ability for when anyone comes in into their space for them to just feel welcomed. Right. So, yeah, if you're able to can do that consistently, yeah, I would say that you're an excellent gift officer. Absolutely.
Well, you bring a lot of really great experience to your work, and I love that you've worked at different kinds of institutions. Yeah. I'm most interested in hearing a little bit about your time at Jazz at Lincoln Center.
Oh, gosh. Jazz at Lincoln Center. I was so humbled at Jazz at Lincoln Center. When I had gotten the job at Jazz, I had never managed in any sort of real formal way. I had taught. I was in the classroom. I taught for years. And those skills are transferable, but they're not exactly transferable, right? You're dealing with children when you're in a school setting. University setting, you're dealing with young adults. And I always thought that those skills would be transferable, that they would transfer well. What I wanted to do when I first got to Jazz was like, because I was really learning predictive modeling and I was getting better at predictive modeling at the time. And I was like, I'm going to come in here and I'm going to predict who's going to upgrade. I'm going to predict who's going to give at a certain time. I'm going to like revamp our entire giving structure. I'm going to give you this. I'm going to give you that. And I did, like, the first 2 months, I was just, like, doing stuff. I was just, like, this ball of energy, just doing stuff. And not recognizing that I wasn't having conversations with people. Hmm. And I wasn't talking. You hear me lead with this when like you said, like, what goes in a good portfolio meeting or what goes with a good, you know, prospect researcher. And I kind of stay at the level of, it's really easy to like do these things if we just understand each other as human beings, right? In a real genuine sort of way. And like stuff just goes a whole lot easier. And I just wasn't doing that when I first got there. So it was a hard lesson for me after the first few months to see all the things that I had did, all the things that I knew had impact for the organization, not properly get implemented in the way that I would have wanted to. Because why? I wasn't having conversations with people. Thus, I wasn't really understanding the systems through which they worked. And I didn't understand the environment and the atmosphere that they had to navigate. Right. That's so the huge things that I thought were actually helping weren't really. They were actually just exposing how dysfunctional, you know, our industry and how things work within right. our industry. And that, like, ultimately, I had to think differently. And it wasn't until I got to the city after I was at the city. For your listeners, I was after I was at the Jazz Lincoln Center, I was the assistant director of data analytics for the mayor's office here in New York. And it wasn't until I got there and I worked around certain types of people and like leadership, people who were running the city for all intents and purposes. And you're just seeing how they work and you see the decisions that they make and you start to realize, oh, these are just human beings just dealing with their responsibilities. And these responsibilities are within these paradigms and like, oh, okay. Right. If I just talk to you in the way that you're like, in the way your world is sort of functioning, you're going to hear what I'm saying a whole lot better. Those sorts of conversations with management and in a way that is substantive so that you know, okay, now I'm going to be off doing a thing because I understand exactly what you're trying to do. I wasn't doing that. And so Jazz and Lincoln Center
people
was
where they are. That's what you're
see people who they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Jazz and Lincoln Center was an education, and I'm thankful for it. I'm thankful for the patience that Pamela Butler was my boss at the time. I'm thankful for her patience. I'm thankful for my colleagues' patience. I'm a better human being, and I'm a better professional because of it.
So you've worked in arts and culture, politics, education, nonprofits. This is a big question, but what do you think the strengths and weaknesses are in these different sectors? Does anyone have it figured out?
No, absolutely not. Because as prospect researchers, we are sort of operations and we can be relegated to the back room. We many times don't get the high that you sometimes get and some of your listeners get in being in front of a donor when they're like, yes, please take everything I have. I love you guys. Right. You know, like that's a great feeling. Right. And like, we don't sometimes get that. So like that celebratory dance is great because we get to share a little bit of that. Right. But nonetheless, we are still sort of disconnected from the process. I have to continually tell myself when I'm working late nights or when I'm working on weekends or whatever the case would be, my work is going towards beneficiaries of this organization, people who need this help. So I'm happy to go ahead and give a little bit more. But again, sort of disconnected. So when I got to the city, it was like, oh, my work is now directly affecting my home, my people. Great. Excellent. Lovely. I love all of this.
And you're born and raised New Yorker, right?
No. So I was born and raised in Trinidad. I came here when I was 10. So for all intents and purposes, I'm a New Yorker. Ask me to say coffee or deer or smog. My Queens come out. I spent much of my time in Queens. If I had to pick any of the industries that I kind of have been in and sort of just love and adore still and will likely come back to at some point, it's education. I love being in front of the classroom. Like, there's, you know, you can tell I'm esoteric in this way, right? Like, you get people in a room who all have one energy directed towards the thing, and nothing better than it. Nothing better than it. But fundraising is a close second, or I should say prospect research is a close second.
Steve, this has been really fun. I so appreciate you agreeing to join us. I'd love to close with my signature question, which is, what do you know for sure?
That I don't know anything. And what life is about just learning what you know, making moments mean for you, and, you know, calling it a day when it's a day.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Not a problem, Catherine. This has been great.
Hey, listeners. It's Keith from Evertrue. Evertrue is the end-to-end solution for insight, outreach, and analytics for higher ed advancement and stewardship teams around the world. Recently, we launched Evertrue Studios, advancement's very first media hub, where subscribers have access to over 100 hours of free, on-demand original series and podcasts, all created with fundraisers in mind. We're thrilled to feature the Development Debrief on Evertrue Studios Podcast Network. Check us out at evertrue.com/studios.
I want to send a special shout out to Morgan Slade, now Morgan Doyle, a high school classmate of mine who introduced me to Steve. Thank you, Morgan, for making this episode possible and creating such a great introduction. The culmination of this season will round out 3 years of the Development Debrief. Over the next 2 months, we're going to explore a diverse set of themes within the field of fundraising, and I hope that you learn something from each and every episode. Please reach out and connect with the Development Debrief on social channels like LinkedIn and Instagram at DevDebrief. I always love to hear from you, love to hear what you want to hear more of, or what we aren't covering that could really be helpful. Have a great day and hope you'll be tuning in with us next week.